This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Anthony Brooks. At this hour, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is listening to testimony from Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel and Secretary of State John Kerry about President Obama's push for U.S. military action in Syria. Here's Secretary Kerry just minutes ago.
We need to send to Syria and to the world, to dictators and to terrorists, to allies and to civilians alike, the unmistakable message that when the United States of America and the world say never again, we don't mean sometimes, we don't mean somewhere, never means never.
Earlier today, after meeting privately with President Obama, congressional leaders John Boehner and Nancy Pelosi both threw their critical support behind the president's plan, saying they would vote in favor of a Syria military resolution.
Congressman Jim McGovern represents the 2nd Congressional District of Massachusetts, and he will be called upon to vote on this issue when Congress officially reconvenes next week. He joins us now from Washington. And Congressman McGovern, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So starting with the most immediate question, will you be supporting a U.S. military strike in Syria?
Well, the current resolution that is drafted, in my opinion, is too broad and too open-ended. So, I mean, I could not vote for what they've presented to Congress right now. And I'm going to listen to all the, the testimony and all the briefings that we have and before I make a final decision. But I have to tell you, I'm very skeptical. I'm just sick and tired of all these wars. And I don't think they produce very much in terms of enhancing our security or really helping promote human rights. And my concern about the plan in Syria is not that I do believe we ought to hold Mr. Assad to account. But, I mean, is a military option the best way to do that? What are the unintended consequences? Everybody says that we want a political solution in Syria. Does this bring us closer to a political solution, or does it embolden the hardliners who don't want a political solution? So there are lots of questions here, and I appreciate Secretary Kerry saying never and never again. But the fact of the matter is, we have turned a blind eye, I'm sad to say, to atrocities in the past. When Saddam Hussein was using gas, chemical weapons against the Kurds, we didn't do anything. We cozied up to him at that time. And we have a genocide going on in Sudan, and we haven't done anything about that. I'm not saying that this is not serious, that we shouldn't respond to it. But the bottom line is we have this habit of kind of intervening when it meets our interest, and not when it's inconvenient.
On the issue of unintended consequences, which you just mentioned, last week you and about 50 other members of Congress sent a letter to President Obama warning about the risk that a U.S. strike in Syria could destabilize that whole region. You also asked for a full congressional debate on the issue, which you've gotten. But that letter also said that there needs to be, quote, an appropriate response. What do you consider an appropriate response at this point?
An appropriate response is a response that is effective. One of the questions that I haven't had answered yet is will a military strike, lead to what we ultimately want, which is a political settlement? How many civilians will be killed? What happens if you bomb a chemical weapons facility? Does that release all these gases into the air, and then you end up killing a lot of innocent people in the process? What is Assad's response? What is Iran's response? What is Russia's response? I mean, there are lots of questions that need to be asked and answered, and there very well may be answers to everything. But I have yet to hear a convincing case made that bombing Syria is going to somehow bring us closer to the day where we could end the violence.
I want to play a piece of tape from House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi when she was speaking to the reporters after meeting with President Obama today. Right. Here is part of what she had to say.
And then members have to decide, do they want to ignore the fact that this humanitarian disaster took place or not? And then there's the larger issue of Syria's behavior if they get away with this.
Now, Pelosi is advocating for military action in part on humanitarian grounds, and that's a factor
right.
that you're obviously very sensitive to since you co-chair
right.
the Congressional Human Rights Commission. So how do
right.
you reconcile her views on the humanitarian issue with yours?
Well, again, my question is, what are the casualties going to be, the civilian casualties as a result of our bombing? Do we expect Assad to lash out even more ferociously against innocent civilians if we start bombing? I mean, there's a humanitarian crisis there. And look, nobody's suggesting that we should ignore the terrible atrocities going on in Syria. That's not the question. The question is, what is the most effective thing to do? I mean, is bombing, you know, certain targets in Syria, what does that get you? I'm not convinced that it gets us to a point where we can, you know, move closer to a day when hopefully Assad leaves the scene and we end up with a political solution. Look, Syria is a very complicated place. Some of the people who are fighting most stridently against the Assad regime are al-Qaeda. We're bombing al-Qaeda with drones in Yemen, and here we may be, you know, bombing targets to help empower al-Qaeda. I mean, again, all these things need to be discussed and need to be talked about, but just the question needs to be answered is this the most effective thing to do? Can we tighten sanctions more? I'm told that the sanctions we have against Syria, you know, have so many loopholes in them that people get around, they're able to get around things. So, you know, especially in the banking industry, can we tighten those up more? But to me, a military solution ought to be the last resort. And again, I look at what's going on in Afghanistan today. We're in Afghanistan for over a decade. We have no idea why we're there anymore, and we're promoting one of the most corrupt governments in the world. So, you know, not everything, you know, a military response to everything doesn't necessarily produce the results that we want. And it's not about ignoring Assad. It's about doing what is most effective to hasten the day he leaves and to end the violence in Syria.
That's Congressman Jim McGovern. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Massachusetts. Congressman, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's now turn to Andrew Bacevich. He's professor of international relations and history at Boston University. He served in Vietnam as an army officer, retired as a colonel. He is also an outspoken critic of the war in Iraq and was so before his son, Andrew Bacevich Jr., who was a lieutenant in the army, was killed in Iraq in 2007. Professor Bacevich has a new book out. It's called Breach of Trust, How Americans Failed Their Soldiers and Their Country. He joins us now. Andrew Bacevich, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks very much.
So right now as we speak, a Senate committee is hearing both Secretary of State John Kerry and Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel giving testimony on why they think the United States should intervene militarily in Syria. I see that Secretary Kerry has said, "We are especially sensitive to never again be asking any member of Congress to take a vote on faulty intelligence." So there's this the ghost of the Iraq War hovering over this entire discussion in Washington. Apparently, Barbara Boxer, senator from California, says, however, that the comparison with the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq is a false one. She's saying that right now in this Senate hearing. What do you make of that, first and foremost?
Well, there's lots of ghosts, I think, that are hovering over this issue. I think, and maybe this reflects my own age and experience, but to some degree, the Vietnam ghost is also hovering. The administration and other proponents of intervention have made the argument that we need to act because American credibility is at stake. That was an argument made during the Vietnam War. Matter of fact, as the war went south and was obviously a disaster, the Johnson administration and indeed the Nixon administration insisted that fighting for credibility was a sufficient cause. I think that the Vietnam War ought to have demolished that, and it's regrettable, I think, that once again credibility becomes an argument for going to war.
Well, Professor Bacevich, since you brought this issue up, we've got some tape of Senator John McCain on Monday making exactly this argument. So let's listen.
A vote against that resolution by Congress, I think, would be catastrophic because it would undermine the credibility of the United States of America and the President of the United States. None of us want that.
So let me just ask you directly. I mean, you've written about this. You've thought about this extensively. It seems like it has been going on for some time, but should one of the primary reasons for the United States military to exist be to be the instrument of enforcing American credibility abroad?
No, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, Senator McCain would do well, I think, to ask himself why American credibility is as weak as it is. And the answer, it seems to me, is that the United States, in its use of military forces, has so frequently gone astray. If our credibility is in question, it's credibility is in question because of the Iraq War. because we bollocks that up, because we demonstrated such monumental incompetence. So my view would be that in any issue about when and where to use force, there are certain principles that should pertain. You use force when the most vital interests of the nation are at stake. You use force when there is no alternative. You use force when there's at least a reasonable expectation, no certainty, a reasonable expectation that the use of force will achieve those purposes at reasonable cost. That's the debate that ought to, it seemed to me, be ongoing.
There are hawkish elements of both the administration and members of Congress who would say that it is in America's vital interest to use this show of force, not just, you know, in terms of the Syrian conflict itself, but to the message, and we're seeing this right now in the Senate hearing, to the message that it would send to Iran, that essentially this is, it would be a proxy action.
Well, I understand the argument. I think it's fallacious. You know, we are, I guess, to some degree, understandably, Washington is to some degree, understandably, preoccupied with Syria. But Syria, it really is only the latest episode in what is a much longer narrative. And it's a narrative that basically that began probably in 1980 with the promulgation of the Carter Doctrine, which planted the seed in the policymaking community that if we can just figure out a way to adroitly use military power, we can fix the Middle East. We can control the Middle East. We can at least bring stability to the Middle East. And ever since the 1980s, we have been engaged in military actions, large and small, direct and indirect, covert and overt. Here we are in 2013. The region is not more stable as a result of our efforts. It's not more democratic as a result of our efforts. We have invested lives. We have shattered lives. We have spent trillions of dollars. Guess what? The proposition isn't working. And therefore, it seems to me the real conversation ought to be not about Syria per se, but about whether or not this record of futility and failure should be perpetuated yet again by trying to fix Syria. And only the most naive person would somehow expect that we're going to be any more successful in Syria than we have been elsewhere in the region when we've committed military power.
And yet we are hearing voices, influential ones, who are taking your argument and saying, in fact, yes, that's why we need more military action in the region. I mean, I'm just reading an op-ed piece from David Miliband, former British Foreign Secretary. He's now president of the International Rescue Committee. He's brother of Ed Miliband, the leader of the Labour Party. He wrote in the Financial Times that Syria is a toxic brew, and he makes the link back to Afghanistan. I mean, speaking of unstable countries in the region, he says there's a real potential for the center and east of Syria to become regionally and even globally dangerous no man's land. And that's why he says it is time for military intervention in what's essentially a civil conflict or a civil war right now.
Well, it seems to me that his quarrel would be with the government of his own country. I mean, if the British government would like to commit the British army to pacify Syria, let them have at it. Of course, the reality is that the British Parliament a week ago addressed that proposition and said no. And you know, the Afghanistan comparison, quite frankly, is bogus. I mean, how did Afghanistan come to be the place from which the 9/11 attacks were launched? Well, if you just go back a decade or two prior to the 9/11 attacks, in part it was because the United States and Great Britain intervened indirectly in order to support the people we called freedom fighters in their effort to oust the Soviets. Well, that effort succeeded. The Soviets were ousted. Communism collapsed, which is a good thing. And we had basically paved the way for anti-American, anti-Western radicals to come to power. So the notion that these are problems that have solutions, if we just sort of sprinkle the right amount of military power, is simply not sustained by the record of the past quarter century or more.
Professor Bacevich, in the last minute or so we have left, I want to take a step back and talk about, once again, the United States military role in all this. Let's listen to what President Barack Obama had to say this morning. I mean, he says he wants a limited American military action in Syria, but it seems that his long-term plans may not be so narrow. Here's what he said just this morning.
What we are envisioning is something limited. It is something proportional. It will degrade Assad's capabilities. At the same time, we have a broader strategy that will allow us to upgrade the capabilities of the opposition, allow Syria ultimately to free itself from the kinds of terrible civil wars and death and activity that we've been seeing on the ground.
So that's President Barack Obama this morning. Professor Bacevich, when you hear that, what are you hearing the president saying without saying it? So,
well, I mean, if the president is gung-ho about supporting the Syrian opposition, you have to wonder why that support hasn't been offered in any substantial way over the past 2 years. And, of course, the answer is because, in fact, we are quite ambivalent about providing support to the Syrian opposition. The Syrian opposition does not consist of people who believe in democracy, Western-style liberal values, and it may end up being our worst nightmare if the Syrian militants ultimately prevail. So the president's got to say that, you see, in order to get the hawks like McCain and Lindsey Graham to vote in favor of a use of force resolution. But I suspect that the president himself is actually quite ambivalent about what's going to happen if the militants win.
Andrew Bacevich is professor of international relations and history at Boston University and author of the new book, Breach of Trust, How Americans Failed Their Soldiers and Their Country. Professor Bacevich, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.